After nearly 2 weeks of fighting, Sudan's most powerful paramilitary patrol the streets of Khartoum. Field commanders say their forces control areas in the southeast of the capital, but it's difficult to verify information. The battle has intensified around Khartoum Airport and is still being contested by army and paramilitary troops. And the fight for information has become just as crucial. Here, the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, says it maintains its presence.
To all those listening to any false rumors that RSF are in control of the general command or the airport, we are now inside both facilities.
But Sudan's army denies giving up power.
As you can see from the green square, up to this point, there is nothing but the army personnel. They're now combing the area for RSF fighters.
The army released video celebrating the surrender of what it says are Rapid Support Forces fighters in Al-Fashqa, Al-Sugra in the southeast. And a general meeting troops in Khartoum. Earlier in the day, an airstrike hit several homes in Kalakla, south of the capital. Sudan's Doctors' Committee is warning of dozens of casualties. The Rapid Support Forces is accusing the army of directly targeting civilians. But the army says the RSF troops are hiding in civilian areas and using people as human shields. The conflict has led to a major humanitarian crisis. Millions of people in the capital are trapped in their homes with power outages, no running water, lack of food and an internet blackout. The chaos has spread to state prisons, where hundreds of inmates from Kobe National Prison have reportedly escaped. Others from Sobe Prison were captured by RSF paramilitary troops. While the fighting rages on, those who can are trying to flee. Several countries, including Italy, France, Germany and Jordan, are the latest to pull out their diplomatic staff and foreign nationals. With no one to rescue them, Sudanese civilians are taking matters into their own hands to find safety, some traveling by bus to cross into Egypt.
Getting out of Khartoum was definitely the most difficult part of this entire journey. Having to go through these checkpoints where you don't know whether you're going to be robbed or killed, or holding my mother's hands, looking into my grandma's eyes, just all holding each other's hands and praying that it all goes smoothly.
There have been more international and regional calls for mediation. Ethiopia's Prime Minister is appealing for both sides to talk.
I ask my brother Al-Burhan and my brother Hemidti to stop the fighting immediately and adopt dialogue.
But the two warring sides appear determined to fight on as Sudan enters a new phase of war and a deteriorating humanitarian situation. Rahila Mohammed, Al Jazeera.
Let's get a live update now with Hiba Morgan. She's our correspondent joining us from Khartoum. So Hiba, day 10 and reports of people in the capital going days without electricity or water as the fighting really shows no sign of letting up.
Yes, indeed. Now, some people are trying to leave the capital along with thousands of others who've already made their way either to neighboring states like Jazeera in the central part of the capital, or to River Nile State in the northern part of the capital. But the issue right now comes down to the issue of financial means. Banks have been closed since the start of the fighting. Online banking operations have also been stopped because many of the banks say that their facilities have been hit and they've not been able to allow their staff in because of fighting ongoing in the streets and their safety and fear for their safety. So for many people, they say that they want to leave because the situation has become untenable with no running water for 10 days now, no electricity. And then there's the issue of getting commodities. They can't go to the markets because there is no market. Many of the markets have been burned down. And where they are still standing, prices have increased. And again, people don't have the financial means. So they're trying to get out if they can, but they say transport costs and fuel costs have also more than tripled, in some places gone up to 10 times the price. So they say that they're just waiting for this fighting to end, and they're trying to live with the situation. But many of them say that they're in desperate need of water, they're in desperate need of electricity, but most of all, they're in desperate need of medical assistance because they do have people who are injured, but hospitals have gone out of operations due to ongoing fighting and artillery strikes on medical facilities.
Okay, Hiba, thank you so much. Hiba Morgan reporting for us from Khartoum. So, as we mentioned, fighting north of the capital has intensified in the last few days. Civilians living in Khartoum say that airstrikes have been launched near the state broadcasting center in Omdurman. Fighting has also escalated between the army and the rapid support forces in and around the area of Bahri. Joining us on the line from Port Sudan is Dalia Mohammed Abdelmunaim, who's a civil activist who's just arrived from Khartoum. Dalia Mohammed, thanks for speaking to us. Can you tell us about your journey from Khartoum to Port Sudan?
Thank you for having me. It literally took us actually 24 hours. We left at noon yesterday, and we arrived at 2 p.m. this afternoon in Port Sudan. We tried to take the safest route possible. I've traveled around Sudan, but that was the first time I've seen some of the roads and the travel path that we took. But we made it. And
what did you see on the way there?
We don't
did
know
you
what's,
encounter
what's happening
any?
Next, but we're here, so we've got to see.
What did you see on the way there? Did you encounter any
military checkpoints? No, we only encountered army. No, we only encountered army convoys and army outposts. You know, they would check, they'd come on the bus and they'd ask, are we all Sudanese? You know, if there's any foreigners and where are we going? And they were very civil. There was nothing undone. It was very straightforward. They'd wish us well and then we'd just move on. But I think we were stopped something like maybe 7 to 8 times, which is fine. I mean, I guess we're in a state where security is at a high premium, so... We all made it in one piece.
What about the situation currently in Port Sudan? Do you feel completely safe there?
Well, Port Sudan right now is turning into an evacuation hub. If I'm not mistaken, we caught up with the United Nations convoy that was leaving. So our understanding is that a lot of the NGOs and UN folk will be leaving from Port Sudan. What method of travel they'll be using, I don't know, that they'll be going by sea, or I've also been told that Port Sudan Airport will be opened to facilitate those who are traveling or leaving. So far, it's good. It's safe. I mean, Port Sudan was in under the army's control, I think, by the first day. So it's pretty safe. And it is a port city, so it's more open. You know, the trade hasn't stopped. You know, it's mainly Khartoum that's been paralyzed by what's been happening. All the other cities, we passed through Gadarif and through Kassala. We spent the night there. They all seem fine. They're, you know, functioning as normal. It's only Sudan Khartoum that actually hasn't been, it's at a standstill, so to speak.
Right. And you got out of Khartoum, but obviously, I mean, you must know a lot of people that are still in Khartoum. Some people can get out, some people can't, some people want to, some people don't want to. These are very difficult decisions to make, I suppose. How difficult was it for you to make that decision to leave Khartoum?
It was very difficult to make the decision because it's never an easy choice to make to leave your own home and to leave your city. But you reach a point where you decide what the probability of danger is higher. Is it higher to stay or is it higher to leave? And we decided we're better off taking the risk of leaving. And you also have to put into consideration you have elderly or you have people who need medical care, and staying in Khartoum was no longer an option whatsoever. At the same time, like I guess when supply is high and demand is low, the prices for, you know, tickets for bus, coach tickets or private car hire shot up. So those who were able to leave Khartoum, unfortunately, are those who can afford to do it. The vast majority of Sudanese and the vast majority of those who reside in Khartoum can't afford it. So, you know, they have no choice in the matter. They're forced to stay in Khartoum. So it's a matter of luck. It's a matter of fate. I still have family members stuck in Khartoum. I have family members stuck at the borders in Egypt. I have family members stuck in other cities in Sudan. But they all they're all trying to get out. They're all trying to find a safe way out. And if they can do it, those who can find something, they just hop on the bus or they hop in the car and they leave.
I mean, right.
It's become a matter of life or death. Do you stay or do you leave? That's it. We have no other choice in the matter.
Dalia Mohammed Abdelmunaim, we really appreciate your time with us on Al Jazeera. Thank you so much.